Hello, and thank you for joining us as 88.9 FM brings you information on the amendments Florida voters will be considering this election. I'm Jill Roberts. Unlike many of the amendments voters have decided in the past, these are not citizen initiatives, but placed on the ballot by the legislature. Ashley Lopez explains.
Robin Roorpaw of Hollywood is the president of a political consulting company that helps groups who want to get an issue on a ballot. She says she's worked on a lot of ballot initiatives in the state through the years.
My very first campaign in Florida was running the three-part ballot initiative for Save Our Everglades campaign.
All three parts of that ballot initiative passed in 1996. Because of that citizen-led ballot initiative, Florida's constitution now says the state has to tax sugar to pay for Everglades restoration. It also added language that says polluters have to pay to clean up any mess they make in the Everglades, and it set up a fund for restoring those wetlands. But Roorpaw says it was easier back then for someone like her to get something like that done.
Up until about, I would say, 8 years ago, it was a fairly simple initiative process. You would file with the Secretary of State with your ballot language, print the petitions up, and go out and gather your signatures.
Roorpaw says since the mid-90s, a lot of rules have changed. In that time, the state legislature has cracked down on citizen petitions.
The manner of collecting the signatures has been highly regulated by the legislature, down to a signature gatherer has to sign the page. They have made the time limit for petition gathering is much tighter now. At one point, you could gather petition signatures for years and years waiting to go on the ballot. Now you have, I believe, it is 36 months from beginning to end.
Roorpaw says these changes have made it harder for nonprofits and citizens like her to propose amendments. But there is another way of changing language in the state constitution. Florida lawmakers can actually change it themselves. All they need to do is get their constitutional amendment passed in both chambers by supermajority. Damian Filer works with a left-leaning grassroots organization in the state called Progress Florida. He has also worked for many years on citizen-led ballot initiatives and is an expert on direct democracy. He agrees with Robin Roorpaw that through the years, it's gotten much more difficult for citizens to change the Constitution. But he says it's also become easier for the legislature to change it.
So the way that it works in the legislature is that they do require a 3/5 supermajority to place something on the ballot. But the fact of the matter is that we have a supermajority of one-party control in both houses of the legislature anyway. So most things pass by an overwhelming supermajority in the legislature. So it really does make the bar very low for something to be placed that way.
Filer says that's why there's a whopping 11 amendments on the ballot this November that were put there by the legislature alone.
I think this is the first time we've seen in a while where there really isn't that sort of access, direct access to our democracy by the citizens themselves.
Local election officials warn that due to the 11 amendments, this year's ballot will be one of the longest in history. I'm Ashley Lopez in Hollywood.
Amendments 2, 9, and 11 all deal with homestead exemptions for military veterans, seniors, and first responders. Tramell Gomes has more.
A person's primary residence is what's legally considered a homestead property, and Florida has a long history of offering property tax breaks to those property owners. This year, the Florida legislature is asking voters to choose if they want to extend those breaks to even more homesteads. These color guards are honoring fallen heroes, those who died in the line of duty. This law enforcement memorial service was held back in May on the steps of Florida's Capitol. Among those who took the podium to pay their respects was Miami-Dade Police Director James Loftus, who spoke about the concern that he and so many other first responders share.
So much of our worry is in not knowing what would happen to our families if the worst should happen to us. What would happen to my wife, my kids? What would happen to my mother?
Amendment 9 is the legislature's answer to those questions. It would grant a full property tax exemption to surviving spouses of military veterans who die while on active duty, and to surviving spouses of first responders who die in the line of duty. The president of the Fraternal Order of Police, James Preston, says he fully supports Amendment 9.
Really like to politicize our memorial service or anything that we try to accomplish on behalf of the families, but what it means to them is it helps in that uncertain time period that they're facing moving forward with their lives after their sacrifice.
Amendment 9 is estimated to cost local governments around $600,000 in the first year. Amendment 2 deals with veterans who were disabled due to combat injury. Under current law, disabled veterans who were Florida residents at the time they entered the service can get granted property tax relief up to the full value of their home. If voters approve Amendment 2, it eliminates the requirement that veterans must have been Florida residents prior to joining the service. This is expected to cost local governments around $2.4 million in the next couple of years. And then there's Amendment 11, which is all about seniors.
I would be in favor of anything that will give assistance to seniors, because that is a period of time in one's life when he is most vulnerable to a whole lot of misfortunes.
Henry Steele is a frequent visitor here at the Tallahassee Senior Center. He's in favor of Amendment 11, which would allow local governments to grant an additional homestead exemption equal to the assessed value of a homestead property for low-income seniors. The value of the home has to be less than $250,000, and the owner has to have occupied the property for at least 25 years. Kim Korsmeyer, who works at the Senior Center as a financial advisor, says she sees all sides and all kinds of people, and she's concerned about the true impact of Amendment 11.
Depending on where the revenue comes from to replace the lost revenue for these additional exemptions, there may be an additional burden placed on low-income people who cannot afford to buy their own homes.
This tax break is expected to cost local governments around $19 million over the first 2 years. There isn't a lot of opposition to these amendments, and those who stand opposed are mostly concerned about the financial impact to everyone else who will be picking up the tab to offset these discounts. But there are groups like the League of Women Voters of Florida who oppose all amendments on the ballot. Jessica Lowe Minor is the League's executive director.
Although many of these are certainly sympathetic circumstances, and we love our veterans and we love our seniors, we just don't believe that tax revenues should be specified or limited through the Constitution. We think that there should be other mechanisms for doing that.
Minor says she thinks the legislature should tackle these issues itself by passing statutes instead of asking voters to modify the state constitution. She also notes it's much easier for lawmakers to change a statute than it is to convince 60% of voters to again change the Constitution. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Tramell Gomes in Tallahassee.
The very first amendment you'll see when considering your ballot is Amendment 1. As Lynn Hatter reports, it considers how far government should go when deciding health care issues.
Retired tax auditor and volunteer caddy Charlie Benz is walking into a golf course clubhouse in Tallahassee. He says he's not a fan of Amendment 1 on the November ballot.
It's rather symbolic. It's not going to affect the Affordable Care Act on a national level. And it's a feel-good amendment, but it really doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Also at the golf course is Tallahassee resident Jimmy Nastasi, who says he'll be voting for the proposal.
I don't think that the legislature should be able to mandate health care for every individual in the state of Florida. I think that the free market should go ahead and work that out.
Amendment 1, also known as Healthcare Services, began its journey to the ballot 2 years ago. Florida officials sued the federal government over President Barack Obama's healthcare overhaul law, and in its original form, the amendment included phrases like, quote, ensuring against mandates that don't work, protecting the doctor-patient relationship, and ensuring access to healthcare without waiting lists. But Florida judges said no to those words and booted the amendment from the ballot, sending the proposal's crafters, the Florida legislature, back to the drawing board.
Amendment is simply about health care freedom, making sure that you, the individual, the citizen of the state of Florida, has the power to choose the doctor of your choice.
Outgoing Senate President Mike Haridopoulos helped lead the effort to put the amendment back on the November ballot with some tweaks. But when it comes right down to it, the proposal may not do much of anything. Marshall Kapp is a lawyer at Florida State University.
First of all, it's important to understand that under the United States Constitution, the federal Constitution is the supreme law of the land.
Earlier in the year, the U.S. Supreme Court upheld the health care overhaul law, including requirements that people purchase health insurance or pay a fine. But the court ruled that other parts of the law, such as expanding the Medicaid program for low-income people, were optional for states. CAHPS says it wouldn't block the state from implementing the optional parts of the health care law. So what exactly does this amendment do?
The only thing I would see in this amendment is, as I say, if the state said, we as the state are going to be the health insurer for all of our citizens such that no more private insurance, then this amendment, yes, I think, would come into play.
The amendment blocks future state legislatures from creating what's commonly called a single-payer or universal health care system. In a system like this, the government pays all the bills for everyone, and there's no private health insurance market. Should Congress ever decide to go single-payer, that would be the law of the land. But if the state tried to enact such a thing, Amendment 1 would prohibit it. Here's Senate President Mike Haridopoulos again.
It would apply to the state of Florida exclusively. We don't pretend that we're Washington, D.C. But it's important that Floridians have a say in the future of their health care. A lot of people are very concerned about what's now known as Obamacare, because not only is it a very expensive program, but people are worried about losing their ability to pick the doctor of their choice, even if they're spending their own money for that program.
And the probability that Florida's Republican-dominated legislature would try to enact a single-payer system is extremely low because Republicans largely oppose it. But if Amendment 1 were to pass and any future legislatures tried to move in that direction, they wouldn't be able to go very far. I'm Lynn Hatter in Tallahassee.
Amendment 3, if approved, would change how the state figures out how much money it can collect in taxes. Tom Flanagan tells us supporters say it will keep government spending in check. Detractors are concerned it will lead to massive cuts in state services, such as health care and education.
Outgoing Florida Senate President Mike Haridopoulos says it's the solution to a problem that has plagued state government for years.
As you know, the last 2 years, we've cut $6 billion in spending in order to balance the budget without raising taxes. And what this would allow us to do is that in the good years, when we take in a little bit more money, we'll put those extras into a reserve or a rainy day fund so that in the bad years, we can use those reserves and not ask for additional taxation or make radical cuts in the future.
The official title of Amendment 3 on the November 6th ballot is State Government Revenue Limitation. There's already a limit in place as to how much state revenue can grow. That limit is tied to how much personal income grows. Amendment 3 would replace that limit with one that tracks the growth of inflation and the state's population. This is by no means a new or untried idea. The state of Colorado adopted this very concept 20 years ago. There it was called the Taxpayer Bill of Rights, or TABOR for short. Colorado Democratic State Representative Mark Ferrandino says things didn't exactly work out the way TABOR supporters had hoped.
Because economy, there's productivity growth, which is usually 1% to 3%. So every year you're shrinking each year away from what the economy is. And eventually you can't do basic services for government.
According to an analysis by the nonpartisan Bell Policy Center, the real impact of TABOR on Colorado's state and local government service levels didn't really hit until the recession of 2000 through 2003. Government revenues plunged, and there was only a small reserve to take up the slack. That reserve was nowhere near enough, and lawmakers were forced to slash budgets by hundreds of millions of dollars. By 2005, it seemed apparent something had to be done about TABOR. That's when former Colorado Governor Bill Owens took to the airwaves asking the state's voters to make some changes to TABOR.
Colorado is in trouble. A glitch in TABOR is penalizing us for the recession and slowing our economic recovery. After $1 billion in cuts, we still face a budget crisis. That's why Referenda C&D are so important. They fix the glitch in TABOR by earmarking dollars the state already collects for education, roads, and health care without a tax increase.
Referendum C passed, and that loosened many of TABOR's restrictions. In fact, for the first 5 years until 2010, Colorado's government revenue caps pretty much went away altogether. Now they're back, but in a somewhat watered-down fashion. Still, the Bell Policy Center says the state of Colorado continues to lag the majority of states when it comes to many government services, including education. But Florida Senate President Mike Haridopoulos says Colorado's problems have little, if anything, to do with his state's Amendment 3,
For one thing, he says the Florida amendment pertains only to state revenues with no limitations on local tax collections. At the same time, Herodopoulos says the amendment will put the brakes on unrestrained growth of government.
This law will make it where it takes a supermajority vote by both houses of the legislature in order to increase the amount of money that the government extracts from you.
There's also certainty among opposition groups, such as AARP, the League of Women Voters, and Florida Business Watch, that Amendment 3 is a bad idea. Those are the primary forces aligned against the proposal. It will take at least 60% of the state's voters to pass the amendment come November 6. I'm Tom Flanagan.
During our last legislative session, there was a failed effort to restructure the Florida Supreme Court. Ashley Lopez reports legislators have now placed that issue on the ballot as Amendment 5.
If Amendment 5 passes, members of the state Senate will have to confirm any Florida Supreme Court justice the governor appoints from now on. Currently, the governor can appoint a justice without review by any governing body. Ron Meyer has been an attorney for more than 40 years. He practices constitutional and election law in Tallahassee and has argued many cases in the Florida Supreme Court. Meyer and Democratic activists say the amendment is part of a larger effort to remove liberals from the high court. He says Amendment 5 will make the court less impartial because politicians will now have more of a say about who can become a justice.
I think it's going to change a lot of things. I think it's going to drive people who have constitutional issues into the federal court system whenever possible, simply because if we don't maintain the impartial judiciary that we now have, I think we're in for some very difficult times as a society.
But some feel changes to the way Florida picks its Supreme Court justices are long overdue.
At present, the process for obtaining Florida Supreme Court justices is kind of in the shadows.
That's Bob Sanchez. For many years, he wrote award-winning editorials for the Miami Herald about state government and politics. Now Sanchez is a policy director for the James Madison Institute in Tallahassee, a right-leaning think tank that has endorsed Amendment 5. He says Florida's nominating system has to change.
A judicial nominating commission, principally appointed by the governor, comes up with a slate of nominees, and the governor picks one. And that's it. And there is no review by our elected representatives. So if at some point in the future you had a rogue governor, you could be stuck for years with justices who don't meet the quality standards you'd like to see.
In 2006, Ron Meyer won a famous case in the Florida Supreme Court that threw out an attempt by the legislature to expand the use of school vouchers, an issue championed by conservatives. Meyer says the only thing standing in the way of the legislature and the governor's political agenda right now is the court.
Well, certainly if you compromise the impartiality of the court system, then what you're going to see is the legislature's continued ability to enact unconstitutional laws, which are not going to be struck as unconstitutional any longer. Judges are going to be affected by legislative control. It's just a very serious, serious problem.
He says his job, which is to fight laws he thinks are unconstitutional, is going to be much harder if Amendment 5 passes. But Sanchez disagrees. He says governors in Florida are currently in charge of picking judges, and they can be just as political as the legislature.
Charlie Crist had an unprecedented opportunity to appoint four justices to the Florida Supreme Court. The first two he appointed were very conservative, and the next two he appointed were liberals, as he was trying to position himself to run for the U.S. Senate. So governors can be very political, too.
Sanchez says it's wrong that Amendment 5 is being portrayed as a power grab by the legislature. Still, the Florida Republican Party has come out in support of a campaign to remove three of the most liberal members of the court. I'm Ashley Lopez in Miami.
Amendment 6 takes on the abortion issue. We go back to Ashley Lopez, who says it's also a debate over privacy.
More than 20 years ago, Doris Rosen from Pasco County became a women's rights activist. At the time, then-Governor Bob Martinez asked the legislature to draft laws that would restrict access to abortion. States all over the country were taking a closer look at their abortion laws in 1989, thanks to a Supreme Court ruling. But Martinez also took aim at what supporters call a right to privacy. It had been added to Florida's constitution less than a decade before. When that happened, activists like Doris Rosen stormed the state's capital.
That was the first march that I ever participated in. We had buses. We marched on Tallahassee. I remember walking down Appalachia Parkway to the Capitol. That was my first march, and there were over 10,000 women and men marching to leave that right to privacy alone in the Florida Constitution, and it remained.
Since that time, anti-abortion activists have taken issue with Florida's right to privacy. They say it goes much farther than the U.S. Constitution.
We're very concerned about the rights of parents and the parents' rights to being involved in a child's decision to have an abortion was taken away.
That's Sheila Hopkins. She works for the Florida Catholic Conference in Tallahassee.
We have grave concerns for parents who believe that they have the right to work with their minor child on many different levels, giving permissions for things like field trips and medications and all, but they're quite shocked to learn that their minor child can receive an abortion without their permission or consent.
Under state law, minors must notify their parents or guardian before having an abortion, but they don't need their parents' consent. In 1989, the state Supreme Court cited privacy provisions in the Florida Constitution to strike down a parental consent law. Hopkins says passing Amendment 6 would help get that current law back.
And so we are trying to right a wrong as that we see it. And the only way that they can get back parental consent for a minor's abortion is if we pass this amendment, and then this does not automatically restore it, but it would give a future legislature the ability to pass legislation to bring back parental consent.
That's exactly what Doris Rosen is afraid of. If the amendment passes, she predicts an onslaught of new legislation aimed at cracking down on abortion that goes beyond consent laws. She's disappointed that she's still fighting the same battle two decades later.
Well, it troubles me because not only am I fighting it now for my daughter, I'm fighting it for her daughter.
The amendment also adds language to the state constitution that says taxpayer money cannot pay for abortions. However, a federal law already prohibits taxpayer funding of abortion. I'm Ashley Lopez in Miami.
Amendment 8 would remove a state ban on tax money funding religious groups. Proponents, including Catholic leaders, say it's about religious freedom. But Ashley Lopez tells us not all religious leaders agree.
Guillermo Marquez Sterling was a public school teacher in South Florida for several years. Now with advanced degrees in theology and public administration, he became a pastor at the United Church of Christ in Coral Gables. He says he's worried Amendment 8 will redirect funds away from public schools. But he's most concerned that if it passes, if tax money could fund religious organizations, religious institutions like his will actually lose some of their freedoms.
How does this infringe upon the separation of church and state, which is a separation that benefits both the religious institution and the state? Do we want the state government, telling religious institutions what to do? I don't want the work of the church corrupted by the interest of the state.
The legislature drafted Amendment 8 to remove language in the state constitution that says taxpayer money cannot be used for the direct or indirect aid of any church or religious organization. Those who like Amendment 8 say the ban is a state-level Blaine Amendment, a law some claim is rooted in anti-Catholic history. The Blaine Amendment was meant to keep taxpayer money away from religious groups, but it also singled out Catholics. This is why the Catholic Church is one of the most vocal proponents of Amendment 8. The Archdiocese of Miami, in particular, has contributed thousands of dollars to a campaign aimed at getting the measure passed. Its Archbishop, Thomas Winsky, says if the ban remains, the Church's partnerships with the state could disappear.
The work that Catholic Charities has done throughout the state of Florida for so many years is in jeopardy. The work that our Catholic hospitals do in this state of Florida is in jeopardy. The work that our Catholic nursing homes do is in jeopardy because an activist court could read into the Blaine language of the present state constitution a mandate to eliminate all types of funding to religious or faith-based groups that are given for secular purposes.
The Catholic Church in Florida receives hundreds of thousands of dollars every year from the state for secular services such as health care. And Winsky says a Catholic charity that helps prisoners in the state is currently under attack by a secular group because it gets state money. He says this incident and others is why Amendment 8 is needed.
This amendment says that we're going to honor this longtime partnership between faith-based groups and the government. Why do we need this amendment? because we think that that partnership is under assault today.
Florida International University Honors College Dean Leslie Northup teaches religious studies and is an Episcopal priest. She says the Archbishop is wrong about Florida's ban.
This is not the Blaine Amendment.
Northup has worked with the ACLU of Florida on issues of religious freedom. The ACLU is one of the biggest contributors to a campaign working to defeat this measure. She says this is about finally getting the state to contribute to religious schools.
This amendment is aimed primarily at producing the possibility of state taxpayer funding being used for the purpose of sending children to religious schools with state-paid vouchers. This way of framing it as religious freedom in a rather confusingly worded amendment that most people probably won't understand but appears to support religious freedom is actually a con job.
But some experts say that's simply not true. John East is the policy director for Step Up for Students in Tampa, a program that provides tax credit scholarships to K-12 students who come from low-income families. He says the law standing in the way of widespread voucher use is not the state's version of the Blaine Amendment.
So in my judgment, what you've seen is a fairly big disconnect in this debate between the people who support the amendment, who generally are trying to protect social services that are delivered by religious providers, and those who have formed to oppose it, who say they are trying to stop the spread of vouchers.
East says a constitutional obligation for the state to fund its schools is what really stands in the way of vouchers. Pastor Marques Sterling says regardless of the school funding issue, if the amendment passes, religious groups will have to ask themselves tough questions.
Our faith community is supposed to be providers of those services. Is our role and our identity changing? Is this going to redefine us as to why we exist?
The Public Education Defense Fund recently gave $1 million to the Vote No on 8 campaign, and civil rights experts warn voters that Amendment 8 is unconstitutional. I'm Ashley Lopez in Miami.
One of the things most everybody does agree on is that this year's ballot is long, and the voting process could take extra time. Residents are being encouraged to take advantage of early voting, which kicked off on Saturday in Florida. And even then, lines are expected to be long due to the time needed to cast that ballot. Election supervisors suggest voters peruse a sample ballot before voting so they'll know ahead of time how they want to vote on both the amendments and the races on this year's presidential election ballot. Sample ballots are available from your supervisor of elections and on the elections websites. No matter when you cast your ballot, you can join us the evening of November 6th to find out how those votes are adding up. We'll have local coverage as well as national coverage from NPR. We hope you'll join us, and if you'd like to hear today's amendment program again or have somebody else listen, it's on our website, wqcs.org. Thank you for joining us. I'm Jill Roberts.